Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Butter Dish. I'm Heidi Ballard.
And I'm Natalie Giulani. And we are Butter Your Macros. Today, we're answering another one of your questions. We asked you guys what you want to hear, and you said, what are your insecurities and how have you gotten over them? I really feel like you guys are trying to bust us wide open, but we're here for it. And if it makes you feel better at the end of the day, then we feel better.
Exactly.
So we took some notes. So we're going to try our best to like succinctly tell you about all the things that are in our minds. But we did hit record and we're like, we feel good about this. So let's see how confident we are by the end of this episode. So let's talk a little bit about our insecurities. And I think maybe we can start with talking about ones that we currently have and then maybe ones that we used to have that mm-hmm. we figured out a way. And I don't really want to say you can get over all of them, but you can definitely get better at them.
Yeah. So, yes, absolutely.
All right. You first.
Well, I think we should start by reading the definition that you looked up. I thought that was really interesting. So according to
Google,
yeah, the definition of an insecurity is a feeling of inadequacy, not being good enough, and which I thought was interesting, and uncertainty. It produces anxiety about your goals, relationships, and ability to handle certain situations. Everybody deals with insecurity from time to time. It can appear in all areas of life and come from a variety of causes.
So what's cool about that definition is that I already feel more secure in my insecurities because it says everybody deals with them and everybody handles them. But what's so interesting, and I love that you pointed it out too, about the not being good enough part, is that really that's what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. It's not so much that you don't like yourself or like these things about yourself or you as an individual, but it's about you not being good enough for other people.
Well, absolutely.
And therefore, for yourself.
And also, I like the fact that it mentions uncertainty, because if we make our lives like all cozy, cushy, comfy, we don't challenge ourselves to do anything, then we can become even more like sensitive to insecurity, because when we're pushing ourselves outside of the cave, right, we're trying something new, something we don't know exactly how it's going to pan out, it can trigger a lot more insecurities. And we might be like, well, screw that. When I try that, it makes me feel terrible and insecure. So then we give up, right? So it's about building your tolerance for it as well.
Right. And then the uncertainty of it is like, am I over this insecurity or am I not?
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And then constantly having to challenge that. But what's cool about when you question them, mm-hmm. that's when you figure out the growth that's happened behind them.
Yeah, absolutely. So another one of the questions we got was, how has macros changed your mindset about or led to more self-awareness and about your insecurities? And I thought that was an interesting spin on this question. And I actually have an answer for it.
Please.
So when I was first starting counting macros, I noticed that, and I think I mentioned this on the last podcast, that if I didn't weigh my food, I would often short myself. And it was interesting, as I was doing that one day, it made me this moment of like, oh my gosh, like, why do I just assume that I do such a sucky job
all the time?
Yeah. And I had this memory of going to a college class with my older brother, who I still low key worship. And
he's listening. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah. Right. Like, he'd listen to my podcast in my big fat dreams.
He is. But he just won't tell you.
Just kidding. Anyways.
What's up, so, Will?
Yeah. So we were in this class, the professor we went in one time and he was like, hey, I want you to grade yourself on your participation this semester. How well do you think you did? Give yourself a grade. And it was a religion class. And so it was a nice little, a few different things all creeping up at the same time. Like, first of all, I hadn't given it all of my attention. You know, immediately I'm like, well, I could have done more. I could have studied more. I could have been more, you know, I fulfilled all the actual requirements.
You mean your perfectionist tendencies
are
creeping in?
There we go. And so I gave myself like a B minus, even though I'd done everything. Well, then, and of course, my older brother gave himself an A. Doesn't, you know.
And I think it's important to say that he didn't do all that you did.
No. And the professor was like, after he gathered up all of the results, he was like, okay, well, just so you know, that's going to be the grade you get for the class.
Oh,
I know. I was so furious. But at the same time, like, how often do we do that? How often do we rob ourselves of the good feelings by assuming that we, you know, it's safer to assume you did a horrible job? Why? Why?
Well, and how many times is our automatic default setting, you suck?
Yeah.
Like, it's never the other way.
No.
Like, hey, you're amazing. Or you tried really great today. It's like, you're a loser, you didn't do well, or you could have done better,
yeah,
which I think is also
totally
the story we would like to tell ourselves.
And sometimes I think people are so afraid that you might think that they give themselves a high grade, that you would give yourself a high grade, that you purposely go low. You know, like, I know I'm stupid, so don't think, you know.
Or I didn't do as well.
Yes,
or
absolutely.
If that was a fluke, that I actually got an A on that.
Like, yes. I'm not,
I think that also is a generational thing for us, because remember, like, the word conceited was like a big
yes.
90s term. And so anybody that was too showy or puffed up, right?
Arrogant.
Or arrogant or cocky, right?
Yes.
Were
like, cocky is such a big
cocky,
word.
Right? Yeah. Was such a big word. Like, that's like, for those of you who are like younger, like, douchebag is your guys' generation version of this. But it was, we thought like, no, you can't be too confident, because then people don't like you.
Yeah.
But in reality, what I realize now is that we actually envied their energy to feel so good about themselves, right? And sometimes it was making up for other things, for sure. We all know that.
Totally.
Like, people can put
overcompensate.
Overcompensate. But I think what an incredible thing to come with that kind of layer of like self-awareness and assurity, even to be able to fake it.
Yeah.
Even fake it.
Well, so it was kind of around the same time that we started understanding more about thought work and self-awareness, and really those two things work so well together, like approaching food as neutral, asking yourself, what do I want to fill my macros on? Making decisions for yourself, planning
realizing
ahead.
There were no rules.
Yes,
for it.
Absolutely. It kind of goes hand in hand with, like, you know, I had always assumed that I couldn't eat, you know, certain kinds of foods, or that made you a kind of certain kind of person if you ate those foods. So questioning those beliefs works so hand in hand with questioning other beliefs, long held insecurities that you and I are going to dive into in just a minute.
Right. And for me, counting macros was fully a confidence booster, because my narrative had always been like, well, if you love to eat, you're just meant to be fat.
Mm-hmm.
And counting macros showed that, no, you can love to eat and have your goals. You can still lose weight, or you can maintain your weight by eating things that you love. So that was such an eye-opening thing to me, that like, no, Nat, it wasn't that you had no willpower, or that you sucked, or that you love food so much, so you gotta like pick one or the other. It was that you just didn't figure out the formula yet. You didn't
figure
out the confidence in eating and feeding yourself, but then also also being able to love what you love.
Totally.
So that was fully a confidence booster. I mean, and what's interesting about counting macros, and we've definitely seen this in the majority of our women, it really doesn't come down to the weight that they lose. It's proving to themselves that they can eat things that they've always labeled as a reflection of their personality, right?
Absolutely.
Like, if I eat carbs, I'm bad, right? And you guys have heard us wax poetic about neutral food rules and things like that. And this is not the podcast for that at all, but they're definitely, your relationship with food bleeds into your insecurities and magnifies them.
100%. And similarly, freeing yourself from some of those narratives also sets a trend, kind of like setting off a chain of dominoes of questioning other things as well. So questioning, like, you know, questioning, do I always overeat? Oh, you mean I don't? What else about myself that I have decided might also not be true?
True. Or like, did I deserve to eat that? Then what else do I not deserve in my life?
Yeah, exactly.
So the self-critical
just
feeds into our insecurities.
Totally.
So without further ado, let's break some of our insecurities down for you. All right, Heidi.
Okay.
You go first.
I go first. All right. So probably my longest held insecurity is that I'm ugly.
I hate this one so much.
I know.
Because she is so freaking beautiful. Okay, let's hear it.
But this is the way it works with I think some of these really long held beliefs, is that you don't even realize it's a belief. You just think it's reality. You just think like, oh, I'm not even being harsh on myself. I'm just telling
I'm
the
being
truth.
Truthful.
Yeah, exactly.
Or honest. That's always a good one. I'm being honest with myself.
Yeah. I'm just trying to see myself clearly. Right.
What a woman thing to say.
Dude. Right.
So, dumb.
And again, similar to what we're talking about, where it feels safer to believe that I'm ugly and I have lots of evidence for that than it is to believe something else might be true. I did have, lots of evidence as a little kid. Like I said, I mean, I was definitely bullied. I also didn't have, I had a birth defect on my nose that I had to get removed, that was just bled into this whole thing of like, I'm a weird, I'm a freak of nature kind of a thing. And then, I had these misshapen, and missing teeth that I wasn't able to have really properly fixed until I was a teenager. And that was always pretty tough. Yeah, it was a lot of tough. Yeah, it was really tough. And I just didn't.
And let's compound that also to be kind to like young Heidi, like with adolescents in general, and the awkwardness of growing up and then also growing up in a big family and having sisters to compare yourself to, or even your mother or your peer group.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe not always having that kind of like emotional support or being taught how to, you know, wear makeup and things like, some of those things just didn't happen for me. And, you know, again, coming from a big family, you don't always have the support from your parents in the way, you know, in the moments where you need them, whatever. It's all good. It's not about assigning blame to anything. It's about recognizing what were the wounds that happened and how do we need to soothe or heal those wounds. So that was mine for whatever reason. Right. So I, over time, I sort of band-aided it. Like I felt like I was able to fix myself to a certain point. Right. So kind of one thing I say a lot of times in our coaching program is, if you believe you're a problem to be fixed, then the best you can hope for is to be a fixed problem. Right. So I got to a point where I was like, if these certain conditions are met, like if my hair is done just so, and I feel okay in my outfit and whatever, then I can feel I'm okay. Right. I'm a fixed problem. But it was never,
but
much
never
resolved, more than
but never
that.
A resolved problem, always a fixed one.
Exactly. So, but yeah, about this same time, I started questioning a lot of those things. And like we've mentioned in the last episode, working out in front of a mirror, and I was able to sort of drop some of those negative thoughts first, which is really important to do, right? Just, you can't go from thinking you're hideous to thinking you're gorgeous overnight. It's a very, it's a process, right? It starts with sort of questioning those negative thoughts. Once you start to see the lie in some of them, you don't have, like, they let go of you is kind of how I would describe it. So once you get to a more neutral place, then you can start really building beliefs. And that's how it worked for me. And a lot of that, like a lot of that, honestly, to give you and both my husband credit of, you know, a lot of positive reinforcement and healthy relationships like that can really help you question some of these really long held beliefs. Right?
I love that you call them self-esteem training wheels. Talk a little bit more about what you think self-esteem training wheels are.
Well, it's like when you, somebody's safe to talk to, like Brené Brown talks about how shame thrives in the shadows. And a lot of these beliefs, like it was only until a couple years ago that I started talking to you a lot about, I have had these feelings for a really, really long time. I didn't, you know, there were pictures I didn't really want to share. I remember I showed one to you of like, it was like a family picture, I think. And I was like 13. And this was a picture I decided was so hideous of me. I wasn't even sure I wanted to share it. Then when I pulled it out and found it, I was like, oh my gosh, it wasn't that bad. And you were like, oh, you're cute. It was like things like that. Like, that's what I'm talking about. Beliefs, even just like that a picture is ugly, realizing that you can change how you perceive yourself over time by learning to be self-supportive.
So how do you feel like Instagram has kind of forced this on you? Because I know, like, with feeling ugly, hating pictures of yourself, and now we're in this very public sphere where you've probably taken more pictures of yourself than you ever have in your entire life.
Yes, 100%, which is exactly why, right? Again, I think that's also what has a part and parcel of this whole challenge of like, what am I going to do? Am I going to live tortured by this? Am I going to live like, oh, what picture did Nat post? Or, oh no, not that one. Like, it which definitely happened a few times. Right? Sure. And you were like, I love that picture of you. I'm like, oh, you know, but like, what working through that, right? Like, maybe I don't see myself as clearly as I think I do. What else about me might be true? And going from like, you know, I think I'm super ugly to like, maybe I'm not so bad to like, hey, I'm great. Just like everyone else to like, I think I might be kind of pretty to being like, I'm really happy with how I look.
This makes me kind of want to cry.
Well, it's honestly, so much of it is due to like our friendship and having someone that believes in you, that is, that you can talk to about these things that feel very shamey and dark, because when those places are able to be aired out and talked about, like, it does literally decrease your level of shame and increase your level of self-acceptance.
Yeah. And the light comes in, right?
Yes.
And then you can't hide it in the darkness right. as much anymore.
But it has to be, I mean, Instagram isn't necessarily the place I would say to like
highly recommending.
Yeah. Us. That's not what I'm talking about with self-esteem training wheels. I'm talking about a friend, husband, somebody trusted. Those are self-esteem training wheels for
and
sure.
And someone that you believe enough that you really believe that they see you how you truly are.
Yes.
And for some weird way, I think we try to almost see ourselves the way that these people that we love so dearly, that they we know love us so dearly, that way.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be this person for you. Mm-hmm. So I've got to believe it. Right? Yeah. I've got to believe it myself, right?
Yeah.
So Heidi's, we'll just say Heidi's was, she's ugly. Mine is, I'm fat. Mm. So I feel like this has been something that I've carried around forever. And sometimes I crack myself up. So I feel like my weight has always kind of been something that has been in the background for me or the forefront for me my whole entire life. And so as the oldest of nine, I mean, you can only imagine, I have five sisters. Mm-hmm. So we have a variety of body types. And so my mom was always this, like, and probably just like yours, especially in like the 70s, so, so tiny, right? Like mm-hmm. sub 100 pounds and gorgeous and cute and whatever. And then you have you and you're like, those are my genetics. And because, and we mentioned this in the last podcast, but a lot of our family gatherings are very much food driven. And when you're in a large family, it is kind of like eat or die.
Yeah, seriously.
And so because our love language in our household was always food more than like physical touch and affirmations and things like that. Mm-hmm. I think that you ate to show that you love that person, but they were also feeding you to show you that
interesting.
Love too.
Yeah.
So there's kind of like, and especially if you're in like a needy relationship or a little mm-hmm. bit codependent, that is something that's easy to perform. Mm-hmm. And so we call it Asian grandma syndrome very affectionately, but we love to feed people. I do it to people. I see myself doing it to people. That's definitely my love language. But my grandmothers and my mother, very much that was their love language. So then therefore, when you learn to speak it, it's like, okay, so learning to love food, becoming really, really dependent on food and having that even answer a lot of my own, you know, self-esteem issues mm-hmm. definitely led me to being overweight basically my whole entire life. I mean, I had a pooch before, I mean, as long as I can remember, even in middle school.
Oh, wow.
So it's not like I had.
Were you insecure about it then?
I think so, because then everyone's just thin. Right? Like most people
seriously
don't come standard overweight. Right. And mm-hmm. I think it was interesting because I look at all my friends and I even look back at pictures and I was always just kind of the thicker girl. And so to modernize it, there's definitely something called the DUF, right? The designated ugly fat friend. But I always kind of subscribed to that. Like that was who I was. So
yeah,
I didn't think that my face was super awful, but if you're fat, it was considered being kind of ugly. And then as your friends started getting asked out and spoken to more, then it just kind of confirmed your beliefs about yourself.
Oh, 100%. Right? Like the no dates, the no, all
exactly.
of that.
And I have a pack of really tiny little sisters. You know, one of them, Kelly, so gorgeous. She was always identified as the beautiful one. You have a beautiful one in your family too.
The younger, my younger sister too.
Then to this day. So I think it's, you look at them and you're like, they're able to do it, but for some reason I cannot. So then it confirms that it must be me.
Yes.
Because her genetics and my mom's genetics, I mean, I didn't realize this at the time, like show that like, oh, thin is possible, but just not for you.
Mm.
And then your whole life, I think, starts becoming about either fulfilling that prophecy or just falling into it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think my middle has always just kind of been what it is. But what I realized in a weird way, it's like, if you can't beat them, join them. So I got really great at dressing around being overweight and really like actually dressing myself underweight. I mean, that's one thing it's always a wrestle, like, oh, you love clothes a lot and you also love food. So you got to pick. So it's always me always felt like I had to be picking something, but loving clothes was also an easy way to hide it and to hide into it. And so therefore I could almost ignore it.
Yeah. Right?
And I think that when you ignore your insecurities, they just become cemented more and more as who you are. And you almost don't even realize that every single day they're affecting you.
So interesting. It's such a great point of like, what maybe strengths are you hiding in to avoid your insecurities, right?
Like you get really good at camouflaging them.
Totally. Then, like doubling down on being really smart was my thing. Like I, you know, as a smokescreen from what I felt
because
insecure about.
Because if you deflect it, then maybe people don't notice. Or if they do, they're like, she's a thicker girl, but she's really well-dressed.
Huh.
Right?
Nah,
and then your self-esteem starts being built into other ways, like, she's really good at dressing herself.
Better not lose that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, but still using that as a way to like camouflage my weight.
So interesting.
So Instagram has been really funny. So just to kind of piggyback with your, how Instagram has kind of busted out for you. I mean, I have really no choice but to be in pictures. But what's funny is that I actually don't mind being in pictures. Mm-hmm. It's more of my concern about my body in pictures and how it looks moving and things like that. So one of the things that has been really interesting is posting workouts, because when you're so focused on a movement, you don't really get to care about what your body is doing. So there's definitely been a slew of videos that I don't post because I'm like, ugh, my stomach looks super weird here, or there's like a roll or whatever. But I feel like as I've realized that if I'm working on it, I have to be more okay with it, right? Like if I'm trying to do the best I can, and whether it's my nutrition or my workouts to improve that area, then I've got to be good with where it's at.
Oh, 100%. It's not posting beautiful pictures of myself that has made me feel better about it. It's being okay with posting pictures that I probably would never have posted if I wasn't under these certain, like, you know, in this life.
Exactly. And so like recently, Fridays have become crop top Fridays at our gym. And so last Friday, it was crop top Friday, and it was like, Nat, just tie your shirt up. And it's like, no, Nat's not going to tie her shirt up, because I very much still am in that middle, insecure middle hole. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I was just telling Heidi this, like, it totally reminds me, like, I feel like I would look like Pooh Bear in it. And then I actually, which we're going to post, I can't believe we're going
to
do this.
I know. I
took my senior picture with a Pooh Bear. So I almost wonder if I identified with Winnie the Pooh, like, from a very early age, right?
No.
Like, I don't even know what it is about that, or why we ended up doing that, or why I ended up doing that. But I'm really, we'll figure it out, right? Well, we'll do some thought work.
Not surprisingly, did you know that I kind of had a thing for Winnie the Pooh too?
Oh, see, this is why we're friends.
Yeah, I know.
Would you fancy yourself more an Eeyore, or a Piglet, or a Tigger?
Well, how about this? One of the most wounding things one of my siblings has ever said to me is that they remind me of Rabbit. Nobody likes Rabbit. He's a nervous wreck.
Who'd you want to be? Kanga? She's self-assured, huh?
Yeah, Kanga's pretty self-assured. Tigger is too much, let's be honest.
And I just kind of like just love Eeyore because he's trying.
He's so relatable. I probably am. I'm definitely an Eeyore at CrossFit.
It sounds hard. So let's talk a little bit about how to become confident in your insecurities, because I think that a lot of people think that they can get rid of them, when in reality, it's not really about getting rid of them. It's about how you feel about them and how you treat them. So one of the things we came up with is honoring your insecurities when they come up for you.
Yeah.
Like, realize, like, that's what's happening. Like, this is an insecure moment I'm having. It's okay.
Yes.
I'm allowed to have an insecure moment. I'm allowed to have what do people like to call it on the web? What do the kids call it these days? Bad body day. Yeah. Or I'm allowed to feel thick or fat one day. You're allowed to feel ugly one day. Like, we're allowed to honor the fact that they exist. And I think that's important, because when you acknowledge it, it removes that shame aspect of it, right?
Well, it's totally.
Like, say it out loud.
Well, and it's like, gosh, so it's like some of these things are so hard to explain when they're so just feelings, right? But it's like, when you're actually physically at the effect of your emotions, like, you're feeling your emotions in your physical body, like, you know, embarrassment feels hot and flushed and fluttery and sweaty and red. And, like, when you're feeling that way, the very first thing that you need to do is soothe and reassure yourself, ground yourself in the present moment. That can be noticing the surroundings that you're currently in. It can be talking to yourself kindly. But one of the biggest traps I think we fall into with our insecurities is judging ourselves for them. Like, oh, I'm feeling stupid. Oh, why don't you feel better about yourself, you idiot?
Or look around and see all the ways you're stupid.
Yes.
You think, like, oddly validating them will make you feel better.
Well, totally.
Them.
Like, again, it ties back to this thing of trying to fix yourself as a problem. Anxiety tells you, like, you've got to figure it out, and you've got to figure it out right now, and you better get going, or which can also be very overwhelming, and all of these things. Like, you, when you're feeling your emotions, you're very likely in a triggered state where your stress responses, fight, flight, freeze, fawn, like, paying attention. How do you respond under stress, right? Are you at the kitchen cabinet shoveling in handfuls of chocolate chips? Instead of berating yourself about that, like, pause and, like, wonder what's going on right now. What has my day been like that I'm here? What are the emotions that I'm feeling? because it's sometimes, if you're talking about white chocolate covered pretzels, it can be about the food, but a lot of the times it's just about the feelings, right? And you're being so hard on yourself about these so-called realities, right? I'm ugly, I'm fat, I'm stupid, I'll never be successful, or whatever, that make you feel so hopeless that, yeah, the efforts are right around the corner,
well,
right?
And of course, it's how we get our dopamine hits. Mm-hmm. Food is an instant dopamine hit. Yes, so if you're feeling bad about yourself, what are you going to do to feel good? Something that's instantaneous, mm-hmm. that's going to be food. Online shopping, sometimes it's smoking, sometimes it's drinking. Whatever these instant dopamine hits are for us, are also part of our insecurities. So when you're confident in them and you honor them, then you can be like, I know today is going to be a tough day because of the way I feel about myself. Mm-hmm. Let's just build in a little bit more compassion for myself, yes. right? So I think that rolls yes. right into respecting them, respecting your insecurities. And I know yep. that seems like a weird concept, but it's like, let's figure out why they are what they are. You know, Heidi mentioned how her I'm ugly started from a very, very young age. My I'm fat also started from a very young age. And it might not even be of your own doing. It could literally be like a boy says, like, hey, mm-hmm. Heidi, you're super ugly in like third grade, and you yep. believed him.
Yes.
Or your aunt might have been like, gosh, we need to have you eat a little bit less. You're getting kind of tubby when you were like mm-hmm. 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Bless your heart, you know?
Right.
Why are they what they are? Like, yep. have you taken even the time to figure them out? Like, where are these stemmed from? And
totally.
Like, and respecting the origins of it. Like, you are six.
Well, and it's, little. Yeah. And it's not even necessarily like you have to be the victim of horrible abuse. It's just that experiences like this, when we're little people in a big world, we don't understand everything. And if certain things aren't laid out for us specifically, we'll make up our own reasons for it. And they're not always, helpful. And a lot of the times we blame ourselves for them.
And there's no way to know that those circumstances are neutral either at an age. You're
yep.
just like, this must be the truth because someone told me it.
Yep.
Especially if it's maybe a parent.
Yep. Or somebody
or
that
sibling,
you, yeah,
or
somebody
really
you look
respect.
Up to. Yeah, absolutely.
One of our friends was just telling us a story the other day about how at 16 years old, a really respected church leader told her that she wasn't that pretty, so she should make sure she didn't say too much because if she wanted to get married, she couldn't talk too much.
Ugh.
I couldn't imagine, especially at 16 years old, where it's awkward already, let's be mm-hmm. real. But hearing that and just believing that about yourself.
Totally.
So
it can be what happens, and it can also be what didn't happen. Like, I never went on a single date. I never was at,
same.
Like, right, like never a school dance, never anything. And so even when they would talk about getting married or people would, I would think, well, that's probably not going to be me because I'm too ugly.
Well, and it's so interesting about that too, is that I found that like I went into one relationship and I was with him for 4 years and then met Basil right after, married him right away because it was like, fat girls don't get the guy.
Mm.
That's what my high school years had taught me, right? All my friends got the guy. So if I had one, you hold
on
to
lock down.
You
yeah.
gotta lock it down because yeah. you might not get another chance.
Mm.
And of course, like, love Basil 20 years later, blah, blah, blah. But it's interesting to see how that really did change the trajectory of my life about how I felt to myself. Because mm-hmm. yeah, if you feel like you're unloved, unwanted, and undesirable, you do make decisions based on that.
100%.
I mean, how can we not? We are creatures of our thoughts.
Yes.
Right? So, man, that got dark really fast. All right. So let's talk about the third thing, getting good at taking care of yourself when you're spiraling.
Oh my gosh. Seriously.
And I think that we have definitely seen it in our clients, in ourselves, and you guys on the gram, that you really, really, really don't take care of yourself when you're mm-hmm. spiraling into them.
Yep.
You're so quick to call yourselves losers, failures,
yep.
rejects, can't, mm-hmm. more than like, that was not a great day.
Yep.
Let's try again.
Like, I'm a human. I'm a fluctuating human with fluctuating emotions, fluctuating scale numbers, fluctuating motivation. Like, that the all of these things combine to create our experience. And you have to get good at tolerating your emotions. You have to get good at sitting with them, supporting yourself through them, not trying to manipulate your environment or get rid of them as quickly as possible, or be relying on, like you were saying earlier, some outside source to make you feel better. If we're relying on an outside source, I mean, Brooke Castillo or somebody said, you'll never get enough of what you don't really need, right? So if we're eating to feel better, that is an insatiable desire.
Right. But what you need is love.
Yes. What you really need is to be reassuring and soothing yourself. And again, I I can have such a nonstop mental drama that for me, it actually works a lot better to think of it as calming my nervous system and calming like my physical body rather than trying to like reckon it out intellectually.
And I think it's important also to just not push yourself in those places. I think a lot of times, you know, most people when they're feeling bad about themselves, their automatic default is, well, today I'm cutting calories.
Because like, you got to fix it,
yeah,
right?
Because why would we go to make ourselves worse by cutting calories? Like actually physically feeling worse by cutting calories,
yeah,
by punishing ourselves because we're not feeling good already.
Yes.
It's interesting how that's like the automatic response. It must be like, well, I'm a problem to be fixed. Right?
But that's also, I feel like what we find so often is it's the beliefs that, you know, it's kind of like how your brain doesn't understand the word not, right? So if you're saying like, don't think of a pink elephant, what did you just think of, right? Don't be a loser. Don't be fat. Don't be ugly. Don't be whatever. It's like, you're focusing on the result that you don't want, as opposed to like, how can we feel good? How can we feel good in our physical body? How can I soothe myself? What feels good to me today, right?
And you hear the comparison a lot, like, what would you say to your best friend? What would you say to a child? Mm-hmm. And I know that sometimes people are like, oh, eye roll, right?
Right.
But it really is true. It's like, if your child's having a bad day, are you going to be like, oh, well, we better not feed you then either?
Yeah.
Like if they're crying and they're upset and they're,
you know what?
They're distraught.
Yeah, you should clean your room and make sure you do all your homework perfectly.
And go run 5 miles. Yeah. And then also make sure that like, don't eat anything when you get back because you don't deserve anything.
And don't let anybody see you like this.
So you hear that and you're having like a reaction like, oh my gosh, I would never. But how many times do you push yourself when you're feeling bad instead of just giving yourself a little bit of space?
Yep.
And actually honoring that moment that you're in with clarity versus just like action, right?
Well, totally. And I think it's such a great point to bring up because a lot of times we hear from clients that they want to set a good example for their kids. You set a good example by the same token, we've also heard that what you do is more important than what you say, right? And then, you know, I'm always quoting my favorite parenting statistics, which are from the book Freakonomics, which a bunch of statisticians used statistical formulas to measure things that aren't typically measured. Like, does reading parenting books make you a better parent? And through their research, they discovered that your kids will turn out to be about as happy as you, about as educated as you, about as successful as you. And I think the same thing is true with your relationship with your body and your relationship with food. A lot of women are so concerned about what it's going to do to their kids. Focus on your relationship, getting clear on that. And then that is what they will observe. And that is what they will take away from.
Can you imagine if we had seen our mothers and the women around us be self-supportive?
Like, oh,
what
totally.
A difference that would have made. Mm-hmm. And I think
both of our moms are major hustlers with no, they do not take any time for self-care.
Like almost like the void of it. Like
yes.
It's like the less I have self-care, the better I am. It's like such a weird mentality to think of it. But how many times do we burn ourselves down in honor or in chasing of that?
Totally.
Like we think, oh, the busier we are, the more successful I must be and more worthwhile I must be, because mm-hmm. the ultimate sacrifice is sacrificing yourself in order for like the good of the cause.
Right. And one of the manifestations we see of that in clients is like, you know, working out 6 or 7 days a week as if that's better than 4 to 5, 3 to 5, whatever. It's like rest. It's always such a balance with each client. How much work can you do with how much recovery you need? And that's a different balance for everyone, but nobody can be hustle all the time and get results that they want.
And the same thing goes with your insecurities. You can't keep band-aiding them and covering up with different things mm-hmm. in order to not feel them. You
yes.
just have to feel them. And so I think in conclusion, what we would love to tell you guys is that do not deny yourself the composite of who you are. Like, be self-supportive.
Yep.
Figure out a way to like yourself with your insecurities. Be confident in your insecurities. They don't go away.
Yep.
As you heard the magnificent Google say, like, everybody deals with insecurities from time to time. They are a
yep.
part of being human and a part of being you.
And even when you challenge yourself, things that you thought you were over may come back. And that's not a sign of regression. That's a sign of you living life on a larger scale.
And maybe you're not honoring them at that time, right?
Yeah.
Go back to honoring them, respecting them, getting good at taking care of yourself when you're spiraling into them.
Yep.
We are creatures of habit, whether we like it or not. And sometimes they do feel comfortable to us to fall mm-hmm. into these insecure patterns. But getting good at taking care of them is the best thing you can do for yourself.
Absolutely.
So while there might be days you feel ugly and there might be days that I feel fat, overall, we know that they are what they are mm-hmm. and how to manage them. And you can too.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, we'll see you next time on The Butter Dish.